We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming to the program one quarter of easily the most influential and entertaining comedy troupe, I would say, in the history of recordings. The Firesign Theater burst onto the scene in the late 1960s with classic albums like Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me Those Pliers, I Think We're All Bozos on This Bus, and many, many more, acclaimed as the Beatles of comedy. And they've got their first new album in 35 years coming out on Friday called Dope Humor of the 70s from Stand Up Records. We are thrilled to be joined this afternoon by the Firesign Theater's David Ossman.
It's a pleasure. It's a beautiful day where I live, which is on the extreme left coast of the country.
You're on Whidbey Island, right?
I'm on Whidbey Island, yeah, where it's often rainy and, you know, and all of that. But today it's very pretty. And so, yes, and it's the day before Thanksgiving that we're talking. And how nice is that? Thanks for asking me over.
Well, it's our pleasure. It's been an interesting year, to say the least. But I was thinking about this last night and getting ready for our conversation. The fire signs predicted so much back in the day, from aspects of technology that we didn't see coming to maybe even this strange year of 2020 as we play the longest ever game of Beat the Reaper.
That was how the year began for us. Judith, my wife, and I escaped from Kansas City on the 15th of March. That was the last performance anybody is going to see anywhere. We did a two-person show at the Kansas City Art Institute, ducked out of town through two airports, got back to the island, and closeted ourselves in a time in which the New York Times headline, "No one knows what's going to happen." and so we immediately just had designed a Beat the Reaper, you know, bumper sticker, T-shirt, got it out. Because everybody was saying it. We thought, well, you know, let us profit from this, although the profit all goes to charity. So,
and the not insane 2020, you actually began that last year, right?
We did. Started out in, it was 2019, promoting a show at a theater in Langley. It was a benefit for Hearts and Hammers, which is a group that builds people's houses or gives them new roofs or takes down their deck and reconstructs it. They're amazing, amazing group. And so the benefit where we introduced the idea of 2020, not insane 2020, was at this benefit, which we put off twice because of snow, but finally did, and we were able, I think it was like $4,000 or something like that, we were able to contribute to this organization on the island. And so we wanted to kind of do the same thing again this year, to do something beneficial that, you know, that frankly uses the Firesign Theater's name. Why not? You know, it's our charity arm.
Well, very exciting news for longtime Firesign Theater fans. A new album, the first new vinyl since Eater Be Eaten back in 1985. Dope Humor of the 70s from Stand Up Records coming out on Friday. And these are some lost gems. What, did Phil Proctor have these in his garage? Where did you track these down?
Well, our archivist and oft-times producer, Taylor Jessen, wanted to do something on vinyl, and we said, "Wow, you got Stand Up Records. They want to do vinyl. Let's do it." And so he went back into, as I had done in 1970 when I put together the Dear Friends 2 LP album of short selections. The basic idea was to get some airplay, because after all, we'd just done a 38-minute album. You know, which DJs had to be very careful to play because it had a couple of four-letter words in it. I mean, you couldn't just put it on and go to the bathroom, you know? It was like one of those long raga tracks. So so I edited, you know, with a razor blade, all of those tracks on the Dear Friends album. And Taylor thought, well, gee, you missed a lot of things. And, of course, a lot of the things I couldn't possibly have selected to put on a Columbia record going out commercially, you know. So this is kind of the dark side. And also, I think it's really funny that we wrote the advertisement for this album 50 years ago.
Unbelievable. And so much of it holds up, the tracks I've listened to, starting with the Lewis Marshman editorial, that I feel like I could hear it on some cable news networks today and it would fit right in.
It would. He had that's one of those, entertainment business executive characters that would come along often. Peter did them, Phil Proctor did them. You know, they're just these mindless people who are the management, you know.
I also loved Shakespeare, Sunday, Sunday.
That is so crazy. I know. I think there was, I'm not sure that anything was even written for that. I think we were just, you know, throwing in anything we could remember. The Duchess of Malfi, you know. That was the kind of, there were two kinds of things that we did, and I would precede the two by saying we never rehearsed, and we never had any sort of agreement on the shape of the Dear Friends and Let's Eat programs, which were ours. And we could come in with prepared material and hand a script around, a Nick Danger episode or a Mark Time episode or, you know, anything like that, 3 minutes. But the expectation was that we were vamping it. We were just going with it. And that we had the license to do that at KPFK and then at KRLA in Los Angeles was a gift of that particular time in the history of FM radio and then AM, briefly AM radio, where you could, you know, you may not be able to play Cocaine, Cocaine, Running Around My Brain, but you could say the most outrageous things on a comedy show.
We're talking with David Ostman of the Fire Sign Theater. Their new album, Dope Humor of the 70s, coming out from Stand Up Records on Friday. Limited edition, double album in vinyl. And you mentioned radio, and it all started with Peter Bergman's show back in, 1966, when he first invited you guys in and you became part of the Radio Free Oz show?
That's right. Peter arrived in town for a fundraiser at KPFK in 66, like late summer. And he was so successful as a fundraiser and such a character on the air that he was immediately offered a late-night show, which he called Radio Free Oz. And he became the Wizard of Oz, and it caught on immediately. It was really an underground radio success. And Phil Austin, who's not with us anymore, dear Phil, was his on-air producer. And Phil Proctor was his old friend from Yale. And I was a former KPFK producer, and I just fell in love with the show. I thought it was fantastic. And went down and sat in, and one day we were all four of us there. Peter said, this is the Oz Fire Sign Theater, and that's what we became.
And you end up signing with Columbia Records. Were they aware of what they were doing? did they understand all of it?
No, not at all. They were signing any band. They were signing every band they could sign in hopes that one of them would be a smash hit, you know? So they didn't know us from Red Beans and Reds, you know. The Fire Sign Theater, fine, as far as the first album went. The story is that the Columbia producer that Peter talked to wanted an astrology album. And he said, well, no, I have this comedy group. And then he called us all up and put the comedy group together for the purposes of writing the first album, writing and going into the studio and producing it, waiting for the electrician or someone like him, which prophetically has Beat the Reaper right there on
right.
Side 2.
Did you guys, were you all influenced by the Goons when you were learning about your comedy chops?
We all agreed that we had the Goons in common. We'd listen to it on the radio. briefly, The Goons was only on the air on the BBC during the 1950s. It was syndicated, though, or distributed by the BBC International Transcription Service, which is where I heard it later on in the 60s. Peter Sellers, a great voice talent as well as incredibly comic guy, and Spike Milligan, zany, crazy zany as they come, and Harry Secom, who was the third person in the Goon show. They were crazy, and their sound effects were insane, and they could go any place, anytime. And of course, they were an inspiration. They were able to have access to a lot more, let's say, than really, really even good Golden Age American radio shows had. You know, Fibber McGee's closet, but the Goon show had the BBC sound effects department, you know what I mean? Yes, we were all affected by that, and I think we all liked, certainly I liked British humor. I liked it better than the kinds of things that basically were coming out at that time, which you could play once or twice, you know, and then you knew all the jokes, you moved on. There were some exceptions to that, but generally speaking, the Firesign wanted to make a comedy album that you could play as many times as you could play, let's say in those days, Sgt. Pepper or any other album that you just loved to play side one, side two, turn it over, play side one again, you know.
Also, clearly some influence and love of the old radio serials, because you incorporate that style so well into so many of the albums.
Yeah, there are a lot of favorite old radio hooks that someone was reminded me of one of them the other day, and it was the opening of, I think it was... Mr. First Nighter. Anyway, he gets out of a taxi cab and walks into the theater, and there's a crowd around him, and he goes in, and they give him his seat, and then the play happens. I mean, what a great idea that is. So I remembered that Judith and I had stolen that idea for a program that we were doing for WGBH in Boston called Radio Movies. What a steal, you know. So the worlds that they created on that period of radio, and that's roughly what we're pretty much talking 1940 to 1960. You know, 20 years, and before that, it's all, you know, it's all Edison, and after that, it's all news and sports. You know.
Well, I believe I became exposed to your character, George Tirebiter, at the age of 13. He is indeed a fellow like you, and I was warped for life as a result of that, but I bear you no ill will for what you did to me as an impressionable young man.
Oh, listen, I mean, I could get in trouble with you saying that. No, George is such a wonderful synthesis. He will be 100 years old this year. He was born in 1920, and you can follow his history in the two George Tirebiter novels, which are from Bear Manor Books, and his early career in radio and film, and then his retirement after he was blacklisted before he appeared on the Don't Crush That Dwarf album, where he's living in retirement at that moment, as I'm sure anybody who's heard the album realizes. Yes, he has a long, long life. Two of his great predecessors also were born in 1920. That would be Ray Bradbury, who's celebrating his 100th year, or would be if he were still with us, and he is anyway, and Mickey Rooney, who's certainly a predecessor of Porgy Tirebiter, I think.
I teach high school, and every once in a while I'll just throw out, hoping for the proper reply, "Where's your school spirit?"
In the rumble seat. You want to snort. Yeah, well, that's interesting. Has your high school disappeared recently?
No, I'm not at Moore Science High, no.
No, but are you there?
Is anybody there?
Are you literally in your high school? Can you be?
Yes, it's possible. I'm not right now, but you can be there, which is a fine distinction.
There you go. That's good. That is good to know. Yeah.
You had such a gift for doing the voices of old men when you were a very young guy. Where did that come from?
Oh, gee, what's the story? Well, part of it came actually from Peter Sellers in The Goon Show and his character, Major Bloodknock, who is much more English than my character.
Hello, David.
Yes, I'm back, and I'm 100 years old now.
Yeah. Sorry about that. They're working on the phones here, and we yelled at the phone guy earlier, and I think this was payback.
Oh, I see, right. The phone guy. Every radio station, we had a resident phone guy. He had a room. The phone guy. But, of course, there was only one phone company. Yeah, the old man voice, I was, at the very beginning, there were, at really the very beginning, I mean the Magic Mushroom shows in 1967, we were working out who we kind of were at base, what kind of characters we were playing. And at that time, Phil Austin was very much the innocent who could be tricked into things, the innocent character. And I was either the old man, and I was the oldest of the four of us, so right. That may have been part of it, although not that old, and or the announcer, you know, the big narrator announcer, that voice, and Proctor, you know, was everything else. Proctor, you know, spoke 11 languages. You know, you could drop into an accent or do characters without any problem. And Peter, who, as I listened to the kinds of things he was doing, even at the very beginning, he could be so way far out there. Listen to that album called The Child's Garden of Grass. And there's a hysterical sequence in it, which is about, okay, you get stoned and you take a shower. And Peter steps in the shower and he starts to sing, and he sings like this. And then he goes into the greatest down and dirty, you know, lyric number. It's fabulous. And that was at the beginning. And he wasn't really an actor. The other three of us were trained more or less as actors, where Peter was and remained a personality, but he could subsume that personality by the time we were well into the second album into any number of characters. Think of Bradshaw, you know.
We're talking with David Ostman here on Downtown. Phil has been on our show a couple of times. The last time we talked with him, he had become bionic. They had replaced most of his parts. How's he doing?
Well, he's getting regularly oiled, I think. Yes, yeah. That's where Uncle Phil is. We talked to each other. It was great. We did a Zoom interview the other day and kept on so long. They said, "Excuse me, we have to. This session is going to." Oh, so sorry about that.
You've also written a number of books too. Can you tell us about the latest one, The Flying Saucer Murder Case? I believe is your most recent.
Well, there are two novels. The Flying Saucer Murder Case, which takes place in 1955 in a kind of noir Los Angeles, and it is about possible alien takeovers and strange religions and odd, peculiar drugs. And the previous book is The Ronald Reagan Murder Case, which takes place in the entire writer's world of 1945, where he is a young man who is quite successful on the radio, playing an old man, and solves a couple of murder cases along the way. The latest book actually out is Fighting Clowns of Hollywood, which tells the story of what we called Fire Sign 2. Kind of, it was our big manifestation in 79, 1980-81, where we had three giant shows at the Roxy on the Sunset Strip. Lights, camera, action, all the costumes, everything, you know, not just a reading off a script, but full big shows, including a musical, Fighting Clowns. And so it's a memoir, but inside that memoir are the scripts for much of what we were doing, as far as they could. And then you can hear all of those shows on an accompanying download, which is on Bandcamp, called Fighting Clowns of Hollywood. And so there's both the history from my point of view, from my very own personal diaries. I say things that I probably shouldn't have said. What the heck? And then the scripts, which could have been Joey's House, for example, one of the shows that we did at the Roxy, could have and should have been an album. And then it would have gone through the sea change that we would have taken it from a script into the studio and redone it. We did that with Fighting Clowns because we had the opportunity, thanks to Rhino Records in those days, to be able to do that and recreate both the using both the stage performance and studio performance. It was a great mix. I loved being in the process of that. It was like being in a Grateful Dead album.
Well, the new album is called Dope Humor of the 70s. It's available on vinyl, limited edition, 2-disc vinyl. And you can also...
The vinyl, don't forget you get the big old download.
That's right, the bonus digital download with even more material.
That's right. Well, more from the Fireside Theater as we go along, surviving this amazing time, which is almost going to lose its last zero, don't we all? It happens real soon.
Well, David, thank you so much. Great to visit with you today, and thank you for about 50 years of painful laughter and often embarrassing situations caused by me quoting lines from various Firesign albums.
Well, you're excused in advance for any time you do that again, Rich.
David, thank you so much. Appreciate your time today. Can't wait to hear all of the new album.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good having fun with you.
All right, be well. Stay safe.
You too, and I will. You too.
David Ossman of the Firesign Theater, the new album, Dope Humor from the 70s, coming out officially on Friday from Stand Up Records. And you can get your hands on that any number of ways. You can go to firesigntheater.com, amazon.com as well, and get all the information you need right there.